This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week's show, we're going to be talking about 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, Ride Along 2, Norm of the North, Lamb, and The Abandon. I'll also touch on some news, the trailer park, some box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And of course, you can always reach out to me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Well, after a whole bunch of news dominated by Star Wars over the last month or so, we have some other news to talk about. Of course, first, a big rest in peace to two people who are iconic artists. One of them, David Bowie, passed away earlier this week at age 69. Now, of course, he's most known for his music, but he was also well known for films, movies like The Man Who Fell to Earth, Labyrinth. He was in The Last Temptation of Christ, Fire Walk with Me. He was also in The Prestige. He had a long career in film and was always an interesting guy to watch on screen, even if the movie wasn't that good. Also, rest in peace, Alan Rickman, who also died at age 69, both of them of cancer. Now, of course, Alan Rickman is best known for roles like Severus Snape in the Harry Potter movies. He was, of course, also in Die Hard, playing Hans Gruber. And other films, smaller films that people don't remember him necessarily from, stuff like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, or Galaxy Quest. It's very sad to see both of these guys go. Even though they were older, they were still relatively active. Sort of like when Christopher Lee passed away, or when Wes Craven passed away last year. Kind of took me a little bit by surprise, because I wasn't aware that they were sick. So it's sad to see them go. Rest in peace, both of them. Next, let's talk about the Oscar nominations. And before I do, I want to remind you once again to watch the 21st Annual Critics' Choice Movie Awards on A&E, Lifetime, or Lifetime Movie Network, Sunday, January 17th at 8 p.m. This is, of course, immediately following red carpet coverage on A&E. I'm a voter in the Critics' Choice Movie Awards, so you can see if, after listening to me for all year, to find out whether what I thought was the best picture, best actor, best performances, whatever, actually wins. But also in award news, we've got the Oscar nominations. Now, what's interesting about this Oscar nomination is the big surprise to me is there was no real big surprises. I mean, there was some stuff I maybe wouldn't have expected, like The Martian got a lot of nominations, a Best Picture nomination, it got a Best Actor nomination. Also, Jennifer Lawrence got a Best Actress nomination for Joy. Now, these nominations did show up in the Golden Globes, but those are in the comedy and musical categories. A lot of times those are stripped away when you get to the Oscars. I could be a little bit surprised that Star Wars didn't get a nomination for Best Picture because they only gave out 8 and they can give out up to 10, but they already have Mad Max and The Martian in there sort of for the popular movies, which is pretty typical of the Oscars. There really aren't any huge surprises. Of course, you're going to hear a lot of people saying, oh, we're going to be tweeting Oscars so white again like they did last year. But the problem is, there really weren't any great breakout performances for African Americans. Yeah, I mean, Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler did well with Creed. Will Smith was in Concussion. The entire cast is Straight Outta Compton. And the director, F. Gary Gray. But you know, even if you watch the award season nominations, those were not ones that were getting nominations. It was Sylvester Stallone got a Best Supporting Actor nomination for Creed. But while Michael B. Jordan was praised, he was never going to be a front runner for anything. Neither was Ryan Coogler. So these were not surprises. And I also think it's funny that people who say, oh, look how white they are, they conveniently forget that there are some people like Alejandro Iñárritu who did The Revenant. He's Mexican. And yeah, I mean, that's not black. But that's not quite white either. It's not the box you're going to check on a form. So when there's a criticism that only white people were nominated, it certainly seems to cherry pick other ethnicities and say, well, we're going to ignore the fact that this Mexican got nominated for Best Director and Best Picture, and all the stuff that he was nominated for, we're just going to say it's all white people. But that's not the Oscars' fault. It's the fault of the fact that there weren't any real breakout. Yeah, you had stuff like I said, you had Straight Outta Compton and Creed that had black people involved, but these were not rising to the top of a lot of lists. So those are my thoughts on the Oscar nominations. Now, one other thing I want to talk a little bit about, Star Wars. It finally beat Avatar for the highest grossing film domestically. It blew past Avatar's $760 million haul, and it's still going relatively strong. And going into this weekend, at least sometime on Friday, it was beating Avatar even when adjusted for inflation. And it's probably going to beat Titanic for worldwide, and it's almost already beat it if you don't count the Titanic re-release in 3D. But it's not going to break Avatar worldwide. Now, I don't think it was ever going to. I think that was never a realistic thing. It's like $1.8 billion. It still would have to make $1 billion more. And not a whole lot of movies make $1 billion at all. But at this point in a release, it's likely not going to generate another $1 billion. Now, there's a couple reasons why it's not breaking Avatar's worldwide record. First of all, there is a newness to Avatar and an emerging market. Not only did you have 3D starting to show up in America, at least, and trickling in overseas, you were having other markets start showing more and more movies. There was greater penetration, and there was a newness to Avatar, a gee whiz quality to Avatar, and the 3D was very new in America, and that drove a lot of the profits, in North America even. But there was also a slow burn for Avatar. It eked out over the world, and it took a long time to get to that $2.7 billion. And it wasn't even that. It had a little bit of a re-release going on with that as well. It's also just Star Wars isn't as huge of a market overseas as James Cameron is as a brand. China and Latin America, they're doing well. Don't get me wrong. Disney's pleased with what it's making in China and Latin America. It made like $60 million on the first weekend in China. But it's not going to be $300, $400 million in China. It's going to do well. And that's okay. If it comes in number two worldwide, that does not mean it's a problem. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I'm only going to hit one trailer again this week because, you know, the trailers drop off right after Christmas because they drop so many over the big opening weekends, and there's a couple of them that are trickling out there. One of them I want to hit is The Conjuring 2, which is kind of the third movie because if you count Annabelle as a prequel, but this is a sequel. It's a direct sequel to The Conjuring, and it is also bringing back James Wan from doing Furious 7 back to horror films with The Conjuring 2. Opens on June 10th.
Do you know when the voice is going to speak?
Sometimes.
Does it feel like it's coming from inside of you?
More like it's coming from behind me. Like I'm being used.
What does it say?
It said it wants to hurt you.
When did it say that?
Right now.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
This looks good. I mean, it looks atmospheric. It looks very James Wan. I tend to think he's at his best when he's doing restrained. I thought Furious 7 was fun. And I felt that Wan had a full handle on the big, huge budget action films. But I think his strongest point is his horror films. I mean, you go all the way back to stuff like Saw. And even though I didn't like Dead Silence, there's a certain respect I have for his style. But he really molded his style when he did Insidious. And then he did Insidious 2. And Insidious 3 wasn't very good, but he didn't direct that one. He did The Conjuring, which was fantastic. And this one looks like it's just as atmospheric. And one of the reasons I love his work so much is because where everything was going found footage and shaking cam, he's going with long, slow shots with loud noises, but using the elements of sound instead of just people running around with a camera. I'm looking forward to The Conjuring 2. I think it's going to be good. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Ride Along 2 and The Abandoned. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the movie reviews. Let's ride on into the movie reviews. Start things off with Ride Along 2. This is, of course, a sequel to Ride Along, which I think came out in 2013. Kicked off 2013 in a big way. Was quite a big hit a couple years ago. So they're going to try and create lightning in the bottle again. Everyone's back. You got Tim Story directing. And in the movie, Kevin Hart and Ice Cube star as would-be brothers-in-law who are sent to Miami to take down a drug kingpin.
All the new dealers in Atlanta are getting supplied through Antonio Pope in Miami. You need to get me something on this guy.
2 days tops.
So get a team together and fix this.
Uh-oh. The brothers-in-law just got to town.
If you say that one more time, I'm gonna shoot you in the face.
Since you've been here, I've had a nightclub shootout. 20 trespassing complaints. Ah! And a car blew up.
We didn't plant the car bomb.
Yeah, but we did the other stuff, James.
This is one of those movies that is typical of a January release. It is a broad comedy starring a couple guys who generally are not going to be known for award season. They're even not even going to be known for good reviews. Ice Cube, of course, is a little more of a staple. He's been around for 20 or so years as an actor, but Kevin Hart has really come strong on the scene and is one of the big hitters, even though he's a short guy. I met him once, and he is tiny. He's like Ashley Tisdale tiny. I think that she could punch him out if she really wanted to. No, he's a real nice guy, but man, he is a small dude. But of course, putting them together, they were a huge hit in Ride Along, and of course, they're going to make a sequel. Did extremely well, and I actually liked Ride Along. I know some people didn't, but I thought it was enjoyable. It's a disposable comedy, and it relatively fit together, a little bit predictable. Now, in this one, they are basically trying to do the same thing, but what they don't do is retread everything from the first movie. I mean, you get a little bit of familiar things happening, things that happened in the first film. You see repeats of those happening in this new film. It's not as obnoxious as The Hangover, when The Hangover did The Hangover Part 2. That one literally just reshot the movie in Bangkok. And while that's not what happened with Ride Along 2, like Hangover 2, you had Ken Jeong show up in this movie. You also have Olivia Munn show up as their detective to help them out from Miami. And she actually does fine. I'm not a huge fan of Olivia Munn, but I'm also not a hater. I mean, I think she's beautiful. Yeah, but you know, hey, beautiful women in Hollywood and in movies, you can find them anywhere. But I think she's an okay actor. She's not great, but you know, she works for what she does. And she actually has decent chemistry with Ice Cube and Kevin Hart, and that works. Now, they've got Benjamin Bratt as the bad guy doing a weird channeling of Ricardo Montalbán. And I don't know whether he was trying to do that or whether he was trying to do a Cuban accent because it takes place in Miami and whether, you know, a lot of the Hispanic culture down there is, of course, Cuban. Or if he was trying to channel Ricardo Montalbán. And I thought Ricardo Montalbán was Mexican. So I don't know. It was weird. That part was weird because if you close your eyes, I heard Ricardo Montalbán, not Benjamin Bratt. This is a disposable comedy. This is not going to win any awards. It's not going to be huge in terms of honors and acting. It's going to be big at the box office because it delivers very much what the first movie was. In fact, when it comes to sequels, it actually holds together better as a sequel than a lot of one-off comedies. I mean, you have movies like I mentioned, The Hangover. That sequel, even though it did really well, was not that good of a movie. You know, had Horrible Bosses, which was not as good of a movie. You've got American Pie, where the sequel was sort of trying to do somewhat of the same thing, and it kind of wasn't as good. This one, I thought it was just as funny as the original. Essentially, if you loved the original Ride Along, or if you hated the original Ride Along, you're going to get the same. You're going to get exactly the same stuff. You know, if you don't like Kevin Hart, if he annoys you, don't go see this movie. He doesn't need your money. But still, it was fun. For a January comedy, it was actually pretty decent. So I'm going to have to say that Ride Along 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the next movie. That is The Abandoned, which I think originally was titled The Confined, but they changed the title for this release rollout. And it actually opened a week or two ago. It's slowly trickling into theaters. It's also available on VOD. A struggling single mother takes a job as a security guard in an empty hotel, only to discover there is something in the basement that wants her to stay there forever.
We blanketed the entire building with security cameras, so we only need two guards. One on patrol, and the other
in front of the screens.
This is Dennis Cooper. He's been here since day one.
Did you know about this place?
I was told not to go in there, so are you.
There's like all these drawings. It's like a dormitory or something.
Do you hear that?
Cooper, you gotta get out.
What did you say?
They're out.
This is another horror movie release. I wouldn't call this a January horror movie release, even though it's being released in January, because it's not like The Forest. It wasn't this wide release that was going for a big opening weekend. It's more of the general on-demand horror, and you got some real innovative, cool stuff happening in on-demand. And this has good imagery. The oomph of the story, the sort of explanation behind everything, when you get to the end of the film, you don't have as strong of a movie as you had at the beginning. It has Jason Patrick in it, and he's actually surprisingly really pretty good in this. He kind of dropped off the face of the earth, and he's done stuff here and there. But this is a little bit more of a toned-down performance. It's not as big or huge as something like The Lost Boys, which he really one of the things he got started on, or Speed. It has some great cinematography and great imagery. It has a great setup. But the payoff, that's the problem. It's that turn at the end. It's how they tie everything together. That's where it doesn't really hold together. It gets a little bit trite. And let me rephrase that. It gets a lot trite. At the end, the denouement, the explanation where everything is all put together. I've seen it multiple times before. So it has a good setup. It's one of those movies that if you watch like the first 80% of it and then turn it off, it's actually okay. It's when you get to the end that it's not as good. But still, you know, I mean, for on-demand horror, I also always have to give a little amount of respect to any movie like this, because horror movies always have done well as low-budget films. Now, some of them are huge and big, but some of them can be done very intimately. And this is a cast of like 4 or 5 people. There's not very many people. In fact, when you look at the cast list, when they rolled credits, you know, there's like a dozen people on there, and like one of them's a voice on the phone. So it's not a very large cast. It has very limited locations, and that plays well into a horror movie. So it works for the first 80%. Not great, but then it's just as a whole, the movie itself doesn't quite hold together. We get that a lot. There's better video on demand horror, but this will do in a pinch. You know, if you have a bunch of people together, it's okay for a rental. Just realize it's not worthy of a huge release or too much hype. But still, I'm going to have to say that The Abandoned kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the big military movie, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, and Norm of the North.
Pressure. Tipping around, keep my brain on the floor. Feels like the days, it never ends, but it.
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling through the movie reviews. We've done two of them. Let's continue on. Let's talk about 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Michael Bay directs his true story about the GRS operatives that fought against the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi in 2012.
Benghazi is under attack. We need immediate assistance.
You have a U.S. ambassador at risk. You gotta send us.
You're not the first responders. You will wait.
Let's go! We gotta move!
We have no jurisdiction in this country. We're not even supposed to be here.
Losing initiative.
Stand down!
If you do not get here soon,
we are all gonna die.
None of you have to go. But we are the only help they have.
First of all, it is impossible to do my job and come in completely clean into a movie. When there's a director like Michael Bay, who is so famous for doing action movies and is such a well-known director, it's impossible to not carry at least a little bit of baggage into a movie like 13 Hours. Now, admittedly, the baggage I brought in was not good baggage. I think Michael Bay has a great eye, and I think he does action really well. But his attention to character, his attention to story, and his attention to maturity is not very good. And that is evidenced by all of the Transformers movies. Now, some of the Transformers movies are better than others. I think the first one and the third one are better. The second one is tedious, and the fourth one is just boring. And really, with the exception of Pain and Gain, he hasn't directed anything but Transformer movies since 2007. And if you look at Pain and Gain, that was based on a true story. And I remember what bothered me most about Pain and Gain was when I went home and I read the original story about what happened in Pain and Gain. And while there are certain beats that are there, there were enormous liberties taken with the story and the characters and the sequence of events and how things happen. And there's literally a scene in that movie, because he keeps popping a note on screen that says, remember, this is a true story. There's a scene where he does that, and there's not a thing that's happening on that screen at that time that is actually true. So when I heard he was doing a true story about the American military, I was like, oh, it's just going to be a bunch of explosions, and it's going to be a bunch of fart jokes, and it's going to be a bunch of stupidity. So that's the baggage I was bringing into 13 Hours. It wasn't even a political baggage. I know that Benghazi is incredibly politicized. I wasn't even bringing that in. I was bringing my disappointment with Michael Bay as a director. Well, then I saw 13 Hours, and I got to say, I was a little nervous again, because it's like 2 hours and 24 minutes, I think, is the running time. And again, Michael Bay, his movies tend to be longer than they ever should be. But I got to say, he did a really good job with this movie. In fact, I would go as far as to say that this is Michael Bay's best movie he's ever directed. And the reason for that has to do with the subject matter. Michael Bay, for all his foibles, he has great respect for the American military. And he has great respect for people who are laying their life down to save Americans. And it is that respect he has that kept him in line for this movie. Were there liberties taken with the stories and the actual very fine details of it? Yes, there were. I've heard from the guys who were involved that there were a lot of liberties taken, but those were dramatic liberties. They weren't just making stuff up. They did it for the story. They did it for the pacing. Because let me tell you, this is a very confusing movie. There's chaos in this movie. And that's a reality of combat. And that's a reality of the world when people are shooting at you. You don't know who's your friend. You don't know who you can trust. And you don't always know who your enemy is, even when you see him. And he captures that. But he doesn't make a joke out of the movie, which is what he did with pretty much everything else he's ever directed. And honestly, that's what made the movie so good. is, yeah, it has these moments where it gets very heavy-handed with the script. And yeah, he has some very polarizing characters. For example, he has the CIA. And the way he presents them in the movie, the CIA is just a bunch of incompetent boobs who can't even tie their shoes. So there's not the depth of character that you could get from somebody else. But he does a really good job with it. And you can forgive that sort of script issues because he's trying to show sort of the sequence of events. And the sequence of events, the best I can tell, I mean, I wasn't there, and all I know is from what I've read. But it seems that the sequence of events are relatively accurate. And that's a huge feat for Michael Bay, because they certainly weren't accurate in Pain and Gain. And this movie, while it has lots of explosions and lots of things blowing up, it's combat. It's fight to the death. And it works. So if you have any sort of honor for the American military, this is a movie to check out. Now, if you're a peacenik and you don't want to have any sort of combat, yeah, this is going to bother you. There's a lot of people who get shot in this movie. And there's a lot of violence. And there are sometimes things that people say that maybe aren't the nicest things. But I felt that this movie really did what it needed to do. And the other thing he doesn't do in this movie, which is great, is he doesn't politicize it. If you want to hear people politicize Benghazi, just search the internet. Go on a forum somewhere. Just write Benghazi in your Facebook status and watch the ire show up on both sides. Because there are a lot of people who are going to politicize this, and it's going to get even more politicized as we move into the 2016 election season. But Michael Bay, I think, made the choice and said, you know, let those people do it. I'm just going to show you what happened to the guys with their boots on the ground. And while there is a certain amount of acknowledgement of the chinks in the armor, which were huge, going into this situation, it doesn't point fingers at bureaucrats and politicians. Let everybody else do that. Because to politicize this would undermine the actual reasons for this movie, which is to honor the American heroes that saved American lives. And that was a great decision by Michael Bay. I don't think he wanted to politicize this. I mean, this isn't a movie that people are like my mom says to me, she's like, oh, Hillary Clinton's going to be mad at this. I'm like, I don't think that's what the movie's about. The movie's not about Hillary Clinton or Obama or anybody else. It's about the guys whose boots were on the ground. And it's intense and it's exciting. It's not good exciting because this is real people and real stories. You know, it's not robots blowing things up in a sci-fi movie. But it's a good movie. And like I said, one of Michael Bay's best, probably the best that Michael Bay has ever offered. I'd love to see him do more mature, grown-up, realistic movies. Get away from the robots for a while, Michael Bay. Let's give Mick G that franchise, because I'm sure he'll do the same thing with it. Anyways, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk real quickly about Norman the North. I know I took a lot of time out to talk about 13 Hours, but that's okay. I'll tell you why in a second. A polar bear travels to New York City to stop a greedy developer from building condos in his home in the Arctic.
Hit it, guys. The world's coolest party animal just hit the big city.
Hi, everyone.
If we're going to make it in this town, we got to show them who we really are.
On January 15th, get ready.
Someone's coming. That's natural.
Not that natural.
For big laughs. Little Lemmings.
Oh, they're amazing.
Are they house trained?
Oh, definitely. They've peed in tons of houses.
This movie was screened only in certain markets. It was not screened in my local market. And then they don't do any sort of preview shows on Thursday nights. I just didn't get a chance to see this. I'm not heartbroken over that. Near the end of the year, you're always getting a lot of great animated films. This year, you had the Peanuts movie, you had the Good Dinosaur, and now we're into award season where people can revisit Inside Out and Shaun the Sheep movie. But this is just a lower rent Lionsgate animated film. It looks pretty terrible. It stars the voice of Rob Schneider. So for all those kids who want to hear Deuce Bigalow, male gigolo, as a polar bear, you can check this one out. I liked The Nut Job when that came out a while back, but this looks like direct-to-video to me. So since it wasn't shown to me, I wasn't afforded a chance to see it. I'm going to have to say Norm of the North gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to wrap up the show with a review of Lamb, the box office, and the home cinema roundup.
Shake that.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr rolling into the final segment. We got one more movie review to hit, and that is a smaller film. Actually, it came out, I believe, last week, but it's rolling out throughout the country. Opens in my hometown next week, but I thought I'd cover it now. That is Lamb, a man trying to get his life in order after his father's death and his marriage implodes, kidnaps a neglected girl, and takes her on a trip out west to show her a bigger world.
I heard that Kathy kicked you out and you're living in a motel.
That's not true. Who said that?
Dad, I could give you my email or something.
Why are we going to see each other again? Imagine a place way better than this. Mountains taller than your eyes can see. Looking out at the river and the old brown ragged horses that we keep. You see all that?
I love horses.
You really want to see those mountains?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to go with me?
Sure.
What I find interesting about this film is when I was watching the trailer, I watched the trailer actually after I saw the film, and it's directed by Ross Partridge, who is a bit of a character actor, works a lot with Kevin Spacey's company, and he does directing as well. Now, this is based on a book, and the trailer makes it like, ooh, the most controversial film of the year. Whoa, just wait for the controversy to happen. It's not that controversial. The reason I guess you could say it's controversial is because it doesn't paint the kidnapper in a bad light. And the kidnapper doesn't have like nefarious reasons behind it. This is not like an Elizabeth Smart thing or that guy up in Cleveland who put all those women in his basement and locked them in there. His motivations are not for sex or to have a child of his own. The motivation behind it is much more benign, and it's just an awkward, inappropriately, hugely inappropriate relationship. And the girl, she has like neglective parents. He sort of befriends her, and she, of course, looks up to him. And it's a kidnapping in, I guess, the legal sense, certainly, but it would not be this thing. We didn't like take her screaming and tie her up. She willingly went with him. And I think that's why they thought it was going to be so daring. But we've seen these kind of movies before. Gosh, wasn't that movie Savannah Smiles like in the 70s about a girl who befriends her kidnapping victims? This is nothing new. I mean, this is that weird relationship. And it never crosses any really crazy lines, you know? It's not a Lolita situation. It's just they're not acting really directly bad, but the whole thing around it is what's so wrong and inappropriate and illegal. I don't even think it tries to say, well, it kind of tries to present it, well, this really isn't a kidnapping because you're really on. It's a kidnapping. Trust me, you convince an 11-year-old girl to get in the car with you and leave town and go across state lines, many state lines, without telling her parents? Yeah, that's kidnapping. And the guy who directed it, Ross Partridge, he stars in it as well, and he's fine in it. I mean, it's not... Generally, when you have the director star in a movie, it can tend to be really pretentious and overdone. He does a fine job. The acting's fine. The girl in it, Una Lawrence, she was in Southpaw. She played the daughter in Southpaw. She's a good little actor. Two things that bothered me about it. One of them is I was disappointed because nothing really ever comes to a head in the movie. It's just a sort of this... You just kind of go through these motions. And so, yeah, she kind of might be in danger, but you really, there's no, it's just sort of pedantic at times. And when you're like, oh, maybe something's going to happen. No, nothing happens. So that's my one problem. The other problem is there's really no acknowledgement that this guy is, he knows he's doing something wrong, but it's almost like he frames it in his mind as, well, people are going to see it as wrong, but it's really not wrong. It's kind of how he approaches it. And I don't know. I mean, I guess there's too much relativism in here because it's clearly on that guy's side. And I don't know. It's just, there's no real oomph behind it. There's no impact in this film. It's well acted. And overall, it moves at a decent pace for, you know, just this very intimate two-person movie where most of it takes place in the hotel rooms and in this ranch and in the car. I mean, it's interesting. It's different. But I still, yeah. I was kind of on the fence the whole thing, and then finally when it ended, I was like, eh, that kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that Star Wars was going to win the weekend. I was right again. It's not that hard to predict this one. Although Revenant came in really close, and in fact, Revenant beat it on Friday. But Star Wars ended up winning the whole weekend because, you know, The Revenant's a hard R movie with lots of violence and craziness, and Star Wars plays for family audiences. So by the time you got to Saturday, and especially Sunday, Star Wars picked up. It beat it only by only like $2.5 million to win the weekend. But still, Star Wars in its fourth weekend made over $40 million. That's impressive. I mean, that's a great fourth weekend. Star Wars has had an incredible run. It's over $800 million now. Leading into the weekend, it's going to be doing extremely well. I don't know if it's going to break $1 billion domestically. It still has a lot to overcome. It would still have to make like $150 million after this weekend to break $1 billion, and I don't know if that's going to happen. Maybe by the end of its run, but that's still asking for a lot. But The Revenant came in second with almost $40 million, just like, you know, $100,000 or so shy of it. So it was almost $39.8 million. Did extremely well. The Forest didn't do as well as some horror films opening in January. It did almost $13 million, but that's understandable because The Revenant almost plays like a horror movie at times. And that's the one that definitely drew people in more than just the softer PG-13 horror film. The Masked Saint did not do well. It only made $124,000 with an average of $250 per screen, which isn't very good. Now, this week, this is the big one because I don't see any scenario where Star Wars stays on top. It ruled for 4 weekends and it's still going to do fine this week and it's probably going to be good for like $30 million. But Ride Along 2 is predicted to win. People are predicting between 45 and 50 million, and that's absolutely possible because there hasn't been a movie that fits this demographic necessarily, the sort of like the broad urban comedy demographic. And also, this is the frame that Ride Along came in with, and 2 years ago, it made 40-some million dollars opening weekend, so that's huge. But here's the thing. 13 Hours is being predicted in the low 20s. I think it's going to do way better than that. And in fact, 13 Hours has a chance to win the weekend. If you go back and look over the last 3 years, there's been a pro-military movie released in this time frame each year. Now, 3 years ago, it was Zero Dark Thirty, which had a different sort of release buzz and schedule and approach. But if you look at specifically Lone Survivor, 2 years ago, people were saying it was going to be about $20-some million, which is what they're saying for 13 Hours. It's an R-rated military boots-on-the-ground movie. And it made $37 million in its opening weekend, which was huge. Now, if you go back to last year, although American Sniper isn't really a boots-on-the-ground kind of movie, it certainly is a pro-military movie, came out in the same weekend wide release last year, they were predicting in the 40s. It made $89 million its opening weekend. These, again, R-rated, violent, pro-military movies. I see no reason to think that 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, is going to make that $22 million that people are predicting. Look for it to be twice that. Look for it to be over $40 million. Maybe just a hair under. But I'm be willing to bet anything that this is going to match Lone Survivor's take because it's the same kind of movie. These tend to be underballed by Hollywood predictions because they forget about sort of like the middle America and the red state crowd, and that's what's going to drive this movie. because they buy tickets too. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Leading the list is The Martian. This is, of course, Golden Globe winner, an Oscar nominee, tons of stuff behind this movie. It's a good movie. It's really worth seeing. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Also, Hotel Transylvania 2. As much as people don't like Adam Sandler and are making fun of him, these are still fun movies. These are cute movies. These are enjoyable to watch, especially if you're the kind of guy like me who eats monster cereal at Halloween. You've got Irrational Man. That's Woody Allen's latest film. Joaquin Phoenix plays a guy who sort of loses his zest for life and decides to murder somebody. At least he's not there trying to, you know, sexually molest somebody. You know, I mean, all know that that could be Woody Allen directing Bill Cosby. Anyways, there's also Sinister 2, which is not as good as the first one. It's really not that good. Then there's also the Stanford Prison Experiment, which I thought was okay. Also on Blu-ray is Shout Factory has released a double disc of Bolero and Ghosts Can't Do It, which if you're going to catch up on your Bo Derek nudity, you've got those movies to check out on Blu-ray in a double movie set. And then there's also Mr. Robot Season 1, which is a USA Network show, won the Golden Globe for Best Drama. That's your home cinema roundup. I need to go for the week. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Fifth Wave, The Boy, and Dirty Grandpa. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.